Prize-winning presidential biographer Gene Edward Smith, who has written biographies of Grant, FDR, and Eisenhower, presents a critical, but he believes fair-minded, appraisal of George W. Bush and his controversial presidency in his new book, Bush. Not everyone will agree with Smith's conclusions, but his arguments, he says, are firmly grounded in fact and are sure to provoke debate not only about the consequences of the Bush presidency that still affect us today, but also about presidential character, judgment, experience, and decision-making in the midst of one of the most peculiar and passionate presidential campaigns in American history. Gene Edward Smith is professor emeritus at the University of Toronto and has been a visiting scholar or professor at Columbia, Princeton, Georgetown, and Marshall Universities. George Will has called him America's greatest living biographer, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Gene Edward Smith to the roundtable this morning. Gene, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
What brought you to want to look at the presidency of George W. Bush?
I had just finished my biography of Eisenhower. I was in New York having lunch with my editor, and he said, "What do you want to do next?" And just off the top of my head, I said, "Well, why not George W. Bush?" This would have been in 2012, and there wasn't really much out on Bush at the time, except for Bob Woodward. And so I thought it might be worth doing.
When you look at him through the eyes of a biographer, as a subject, what is fascinating about him?
You know, I really can't say that anything is fascinating about him. I have been struck by his religiosity and the fact that for several years as president, he believed that he was God's agent here on earth fighting evil, which is very unusual. But otherwise, I didn't find anything fascinating.
So what interested you then as a subject of wanting to say, I want to dedicate these hundreds of pages to this man and get to the meat of the subject?
Well, I thought it was necessary to describe how the United States got into the situation that it got into, insofar as Iraq is concerned. And the only way to do that, it seemed to me, was to handle it as a biography.
In looking at the early life, what does that tell us about his time as president and what brought him to office?
Oh, gee, his early life was until the age of 40 was pretty well messed up. And I think that maybe it's how to retool yourself, but I think he was a problem for his family, for his parents, just about up until the time he became 40 years old.
But at the time where he starts to get his act together, is that a real conversion, or are there still elements of his life and his personality that prove to be consequential when it comes to his running of the country for 8 years?
Hmm. I don't know. Now I have been in the last several paragraphs here quite negative about him, but there are but there are a number of good points. I mean, on the issue of immigration and dealing with Latinos and with blacks, he was quite commendable, and I think that has to be recognized. And prescription drugs for seniors is quite a admirable position to take. So he was not all bad. It's just on the question of the reaction to 9/11 that I think he really did poorly.
You talk in the book that he was supported in his efforts by what you believe is something unprecedented in American presidential history, and that is this phalanx of sub-cabinet appointees who are powerfully motivated and equipped to provide the justification for the policies that the president had decided upon.
Well, yes, and I think that's important, to provide the justification for the policies the president had decided upon. These were not people, Scooter Libby, Paul Wolfowitz, these were not people who devised the policy. These were people who provided the explanation for what the president wanted to do.
In what they were able to accomplish as a team, it does come from the president, though, because many have faulted of sort of the tail wagging the dog.
Well, I think that's true. I think that many have overstated Cheney's role. Cheney was very important for the first year that Bush was in office, and particularly for the first 6 months. It was Cheney really who who staffed the administration. And don't forget, Bush had no experience in Washington, whereas Cheney had been chief of staff, secretary to the president, secretary of defense, and a congressman for 11 years. So Cheney knew Washington, and Bush relied on him in that capacity. But after a year or so, all of that was old hat, and Cheney's role sort of declined.
You write in the book, unprepared for the complexities of governing with little experience, with little executive experience, and a glaring deficit in his attention span, untutored, untraveled, and unversed in the ways of the world, Bush thrived on making a show of his decisiveness, but his greatest strength became his worst flaw. How so?
Well, I think his decisiveness after 9/11 to call 9/11 an act of war, both domestically in terms of enhanced interrogation, of course with the Iraq War, these were issues on which Bush made the decision. He was the decider, and he decided on that. That there wasn't a great deal of reflection, and he didn't encourage his cabinet to discuss these issues or to reflect on them or to consider other possibilities.
You talk about in the book that not since the days of Warren Harding or Calvin Coolidge or even Herbert Hoover was there a Republican who had such a hands-off approach and had a president that had been so detached, you write, from the day-to-day determination of policy alternatives.
Yes, that's true, with the exception of 9/11 and his response to 9/11. Don't forget, Bush had a very short attention span. He wanted anything he looked at more or less on one page. And didn't really think about things or consider things at in depth, and I believe that was a serious failing. His classmates at Harvard Business School called him dynamically ignorant. That's probably fair.
The decision, which you believe to be a catastrophic one, but the decision to evade Iraq and to depose Saddam Hussein, Where, and obviously this is an opportunity to succeed where his father had failed. How do you believe that that may ultimately be his legacy?
I think it will be his legacy because the issue is still with us. If you look at the terrorism fate today, that is all a direct result of having toppled Saddam. Saddam maintained Iraq was the most secular state in the Middle East at that time. Those religious divisions were kept under control, and Saddam was very effective in doing that. And let me go back to his father. His father didn't fail. His father, considering it carefully, decided to leave Saddam in, both to maintain order in Iraq and also as a counterbalance to Iran. So I don't think you can say his father lost the situation. I think his father simply decided it differently, and I believe his father was correct.
And as you point out in the book, there was also no ISIS under Saddam Hussein, and He had no weapons of mass destruction. So what led to the decision then?
To go after Saddam?
Yes.
Apparently, Bush, from the evening of 9/11, had Saddam in his sights, and continually was determined to do that. Let me jump forward just for a moment and say that not only was the invasion of Iraq wrong by 43, but the military all assumed that they were going in quickly and getting out, that they would topple Saddam, find weapons of mass destruction, get out, and let the Israelis stay in place. It was George W. Bush who changed that in that speech on the flight deck of the Abraham Lincoln on May 1st when he said, we're going to stay and bring democracy to Iraq. That was not what the military had planned for, and so they were quite short.
What was the end game? In his mind, what was the end game?
Well, I think the end game in his mind was to bring democracy to Iraq. And I don't think he was aware of the religious divisions in Iraq. And I don't think he was aware of what he was getting into and letting loose. So I think those are all false. So he made that decision on his own, and it was a terrible decision.
As you said a moment ago, this is something that is still with us, that the reverberations from that decision are still very much with us. But it has been 8 years since he left office. How much of that is by what was set in motion very early on in 2001 and 2002, and how much of it is a failure over the last administration to also understand what was moving and going on in that region?
Well, I certainly think it was the former. I certainly think it's all attributable to Bush's toppling of Saddam Hussein, which was an emotional response on his part, and bore no relation to the maintenance of order in Iraq, which Saddam was able to do, and his belief that it was the purpose of the United States to spread democracy throughout the world. Now, if you think back from World War II to the present, no American president thought it was his that the United States should be involved in bringing democracy to the rest of the world. We were concerned with maintaining peace in the world, but not necessarily with bringing democracy to every country.
When you consider the action that he took in Iraq, was action and real the possibility of progress in Afghanistan overlooked as a result of that decision?
Well, of course, once he got into Iraq, the United States did not have the troops or the means of putting Afghanistan back in order, and that sort of became a dead end. So
when you look at the creations of the conditions for this ongoing insurrection and worldwide terrorism that is being led today by ISIS and ISIS fundamentalists, you put that at the feet of George W. Bush.
Absolutely, 100%. Saddam Hussein kept the lid on it. There was no ISIS under Saddam. Saddam's regime was a dictatorship, and it you can call it a police state or whatever, but it kept the lid on that religious division, that religious fundamentalism, that as soon as Saddam was removed, came to the fore. And yes.
Do you think, and I know you've been asked this question a lot, but given, and you also mentioned to us a moment ago, that he was not all bad. There were things going on. Do you believe that the question is still out as to whether he will be our nation's worst president?
Oh, some people argue that, but you know, Herbert Hoover has a pretty good lock on that. I don't see how you can put him in that same category. I think that his domestic achievements are significant, and particularly coming to grips with the problem with the downturn in 2008, when it looked like we were going into another Great Depression. I think that is an example. His handling of the downturn, of his listening to experts on the subject, the Secretary of the Treasury, Hank Paulson, and the head of the Federal Reserve, Ben Bernanke. I think he listened to those two and really did what he would not have done if it were up to if he were calling the shots himself.
And you also make the point that in these foreign policy disasters and that record being a disaster, yes, you mentioned Iraq, but you also point to his decision in 2001 to break off negotiations with North Korea to perhaps be the second worst decision of his administration.
That's exactly right. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because the Iraq business has been so large that people forget that in 2001, North Korea was on the verge of renouncing nuclear weapons and concluding a peace treaty with South Korea. The Clinton administration had begun this in the 1990s. Madeleine Albright had visited Pyongyang in December of 2000, just before Bush took office. The president of South Korea was in Washington in March of 2001, and they thought they had a deal. And Bush said no. So I think that is a very serious issue. And again, it sort of goes back to Bush's belief that the world is a contest between good and evil, and he saw the North Korean regime as evil and was not prepared to make peace with it.
And you also say, like his decision in Iraq, this was on his own authority, and he single-handedly rejected negotiating with North Korea.
Yes, absolutely. If you think back to that time, you can remember that Colin Powell, who was Secretary of State, made an announcement that he thought that everything was going to be okay and they're going to conclude this, and was called on the carpet by Bush and had to retract.
I do want to end with something that you spoke of early on in our conversation, and that is his religion and the importance of religion in his life. How do you think that his religious certitude affected his judgment?
Oh, I think it was in terms of foreign policy, in terms of dealing with Iraq, and we've seen with North Korea, I think it was determinative. And I think that's a very dangerous situation to be in. Particularly if you're dealing with matters of foreign policy, you have to look at the facts. You can't be guided by religious belief, and I think that's largely the cause of what happened.
Well, the name of the biography is Bush by Gene Edward Smith. Gene, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us. I do appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book is Bush. It is published by Simon & Schuster. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.